It is holiday time again at Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. And this year we are doing our second annual 10 days of holiday giveaways every other day starting at December 1st. And Bridget actually knows all of the secret gifts that we are going to be giving away, but you're not going to say anything, right, Bridget?
No, I'm not telling yet. You have to watch so you can find out. And they are great gifts too. I want to win them, but I can't.
If you want to get more information about it, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, or subscribe to the podcast so you can hear more. Our Facebook group will have the information, as well as our Twitter page. So get ready for the holidays with some great gifts from Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. Here at Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
And this episode is part two of our conversation with Patricia Heaton, which we are still trying to get over the fact that we can say we had a conversation with yes. Patricia Heaton.
She was so fun. She was so fun. It was like one of our good buddies.
You know, we really notice with midlife women that we interview that we just all have such common complaints and common joys and children issues. And, you know, even on this one, we were trying to be mindful of the time. And you'll notice that as we segue kind of into thank you so much for coming on, she's like, we haven't even talked about Botox yet.
Yes.
So we just kept going. So here we go.
Mm-hmm. I find, and the thing that I sort of fear the most about getting older is getting complacent. And, you know, your energy changes. And that's the other thing with the drinking. And I don't know how much you guys talk about it on here. But it was interesting, coinciding with my decision to stop, I saw some interesting articles and some studies about women who've been moderate drinkers all their life becoming problem drinkers in their 40s and 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think some of that can be attributed to our bodies change. So we're not processing alcohol as well as we used to. That your kids leave the house. Maybe your husband leaves, or he's retired and he never leaves. That can be very daunting. Or you retire from your job and your kids are gone, or, you know, whatever it may be that kind of unmoors you. Like, I feel unmoored every time a show ends, a series ends. That sort of anchors my day and anchors my year. And when it goes, I sort of feel floaty and not in the best way. Mm-hmm. And so, I have to then self-impose a schedule, and I've gotten better at doing that. And I need that. But that can affect you. And so when you're feeling those uncomfortable feelings, it's easy just to have a drink and you're having it at 5 o'clock and then, oh, it's noon and it's Prosecco and it's noon and it's Prosecco. And Prosecco isn't really alcohol, so we can have Prosecco at noon. You know, and Campari isn't really alcohol, so I'll have three of those tonight, you know, instead of one, right. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And so I just thought, I'm just going to really feel my feelings and just embrace the discomfort of change. Change is uncomfortable. And it's so easy as you get older to just kind of sink in and watch TV, which we do so much of. You know, my niece was living with us for a while, and she was in our guest house, and she'd come home from work, and she'd walk by, and you could see through the French doors in the back of the house of me and Dave watching Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
And I never thought about it until my niece was living with us and she'd walk by every night, kind of wave. And I'm like, we have got to go out once in a while. All she sees us doing is watching TV. That's what she must think, that's all we do. And then I was like, because it's all we do.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just easy to get into that thing. And I sort of, you know, want to rage against the dying of the light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the stopping drinking was one of those times where God really answered my prayer immediately in a very clear way. I was with my sons in Nashville, and my one son says, come over to the house for dinner. A bunch of us are getting together for dinner. Well, that day, I have quite a few friends who are sober, and I had been with some sober girlfriends. And I just started thinking, I think I want to stop drinking. I think I do, but I have no capacity to make that happen. I adore bourbon. I adore it. And so I will not be able to do this. And as I was sort of like just puttering around the house, I said to God, you know, I would really like to stop drinking, and you're going to have to do it because there's just no way I can do it. It was similar to when I was in my cousin's girlfriend's mother's back bedroom. You know, just that kind of thing, like, okay, I realize this, you take it. That night when I went to dinner at my son's, I brought over a couple bottles of wine. We were drinking the wine and cooking. We were drinking the wine and eating, drinking the wine and cleaning up, and drinking the wine while a bunch of us played a board game. So this is over the space of, like, say, 5 hours, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt perfectly lucid. I was just filling my glass with red wine as it emptied. So who knows how many glasses it was, 5 glasses, mm-hmm. 7 glasses, over like 5 or 6 hours, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I felt fine. I really felt fine. And we're playing this game, and there's me and my son and my sons and their friends at this table, all guys. I think one other mom was there. Mm-hmm. And I was making this joke, and I started to say, you know, in our family, it's a tradition. I could not pronounce the word tradition to save my life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I tried 3 times out loud, couldn't say it.
Oh, my.
I can't even mispronounce it for you the way I was mispronouncing it.
Oh, wow.
And wow. My son at the end of the table goes, oh, that's nice, Mom. You can't even talk.
Yeah.
It's in front of their friends, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so I felt so embarrassed. And, you know, I went home, I went to bed. I still felt fine. And I thought, what happened? Like, what was alcohol doing to my brain so that we had this horrible kind of synapse misfire, right? Just on that one word. Because I woke up the next day, I felt fine, as if I had not been drinking at all.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I just felt like God showed me, like, this is what's going on in your brain. This is what alcohol is doing to your brain.
Wow.
And I happened to have scheduled breakfast with one of my sober friends that next day. So, I had been with her during the week, and we'd been going out to lunch. I'd been drinking Prosecco at lunch. When I saw her that morning, I said to her, well, you're the first person I'm telling. This is the first day of me not drinking anymore. And she looked at me, she's like, what happened? And I told her, and she roared, and then she shared with me all her stories. And she's the person I've called now twice to say, okay, it's been 1 year. Okay, it's been 2 years. And I'll always call you because you're the first person I told.
Oh, wow. Wow. And you're not a big person, so I can see how that would affect.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of women that we've talked to that have stopped drinking. That was one of the things they decided to
do. There are a lot of women in midlife that were using it to numb some emotions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they realized that they weren't living their best life when they were drinking. So
that's exactly right. And, you know, when you start realizing how precious time is and each day is, and you can't afford to wake up and feel crappy.
Right.
Like, that's so much of it is like, you just feel crappy. And you know, you're like, oh, that's 3 hours of me kind of trying to get out of bed that I can't get back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more I want to do in my life.
Mm-hmm. What have you felt is the biggest change since you stopped drinking? What have you noticed as the biggest change?
Oh, you know what? I talked about this with Brad Garrett, who played Robert on Everybody Loves Raymond, sure. because he stopped drinking very early on during the series, maybe like the second season. Oh, wow. And I told him, I said, Brad, you're not going to believe it. This is right when I had stopped. And I said, I've stopped drinking. And he goes, and we talked about it. He goes, do you find you cry more easily now? I said, I do.
Really?
I'm more emotional. And I think I didn't realize the numbing effect it can have on you, that even when you're not drinking, that it extends out toward even the next day. Like I'm just much more in touch with my emotions now. I've always been pretty in touch with my emotions as an actor, but in my personal life, very compartmentalized, because I just had so much to do all the time that you just have to set certain things aside and deal with them later for certain feelings and things. Now I find that it just comes up so much more easily. So that's a huge thing.
Wow. That is a big thing. And a good thing, because you're releasing a lot of it. You're not holding it inside, which is never
good. I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been kind of a revelation. And, you know, another thing, a Raymond connection there, Peter Boyle was sober for many years. And we used to do, I think tape night was like on a Thursday. And after tape night, you know, and you're kind of all G'd up because of the audience and the adrenaline. And so everybody would go out and have drinks after to celebrate, you know, that week's taping. And I remember asking Peter, how do you not have a drink after a show? Like, it's just such a great release. And he said, you know, I think about taking the first drink, and then I think how that leads to the second drink. And I just kind of walk through it in my mind. And by the time I get to that third or fifth drink in my mind, I realize I don't want to be there. I don't want to go there. And that gets me over that hump. And I have never forgotten him saying it. And so when I stopped, I would think about it too. I would feel the urge come up. And it's sort of Pavlovian at the beginning. You just automatically, when you go into a restaurant, you want to order that drink, and you've got to get over that little hump. Mm-hmm. And it's a Pavlovian response to this. The waiter comes towards you, you know, like you start salivating.
Right.
And you just have to just breathe through that. Think about it. Think about taking in that drink and whatever. And then decide if that's how you want to feel. Mm-hmm. And so that was really helpful. And we just found out. So we did this cast reunion Zoom. Mm-hmm. And to raise money for Peter's myeloma foundation charity.
Okay.
And we were talking about this, and Brad Garrett told us, and I told them that story, and Brad Garrett told us that Peter used to have a little AA meeting in his dressing room on tape night. And here it is, 20-some years later, none of us knew it except for Brad Garrett, because he invited Brad to come.
Oh, wow.
That's so
we didn't know it until yesterday.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yes. Isn't that cool?
That's incredible.
It really is. And you know, just what people go through, going through a sobriety process and how important those meetings are. That is really amazing.
Yeah.
To hear that. Wow. Wow.
What would you like women of our age range that are listening to this to get out of the book? Like, they read the book. It's a great book. What would you like them to get out of it?
I want to give women some inspiration and hope and sort of excite them and maybe get them feeling like excited about their future, regardless of what their situation is right now, that there are ways through and over and around what they're dealing with. You know, the tough thing about life is that nothing stays the same, but the great thing about life is that nothing stays the same. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're going to have wonderful times in your life that you wish would never end, but they will. But you'll always have those memories. But when you're in the tough times, the confusing times, the times of uncertainty, those too will pass. And you have to, you know, in the gay community, the phrase, it gets better, is a very powerful statement. And I think that applies to all of us. And in this book, I think you see how it got better for people, even though it's not necessarily a straight path.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think that you can experience negative things, but again, if you take lessons from them, then that's how you grow. The only way you grow is through struggle and pain. That's the mm-hmm. only way you grow. And so we have to have those periods in our life. And hopefully, you know, it's not sustained periods of pain and struggle. And hopefully that along the way you have family and friends and significant others who are there for you to share the journey. And that's what it is. It's a journey. And it's not so much about, I have to make this much money, or I have to be married to this person, or my kids have to be successful. That's a big one that will kill you if you're mm-hmm. invested, mm-hmm. if your own identity is invested in the success of your children. It's really bad for you, and it's super bad for them.
Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah.
So, but that life is about you growing as a person and flourishing as a human being, and whatever talents God has given you, that you find a way to employ them in the service of your fellow man. That, I think, is what I hope that book inspires in people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's so many inspiring stories in it,
yes.
including your own, that I think you walk away with that sense of, okay, I can have a second act. I can do this, whether by forced or choosing to do it. It doesn't have to be huge.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Whatever works for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. We appreciate
the
generosity of your time and the conversation, because I think our audience is going to love it.
They are good.
Yes.
And we didn't even get to like Botox and fillers, which I'm a huge fan of.
Okay. Wait, let's just interject that for a moment.
Try to look as fabulous as you can afford to look.
That is an interesting question, because I did want to ask you about Hollywood and aging. You know, we were interviewing Mindy Cohn, who was Natalie Green on The Facts of Life.
Yes, she was on The Middle. She was on an episode of The Middle.
Okay, she's amazing. We love her. We absolutely love her.
Yeah.
And she was saying how she'll audition and she'll go in for the parts that are 50, and 60 and 70 year old women are auditioning for the 50s. And then they tell her she looks too young for a different part. It's like there's no rhyme or reason. So what is your opinion on that?
Well, it's first of all, television has been really great for women for the most part. Me Too aside, which the whole entertainment industry had that reckoning, and that touched every area. But as far as roles, there were many more opportunities for women in television and always have been, even though it was kind of looked down on as sort of, you know, not as great a medium as film. But television has been great for women, and particularly for older women. I mean, Designing Women, Golden Girls, Maude, Mary mm-hmm. Tyler Moore, Cagney and Lacey. You had, what was the Diane Carroll show? Julia. My brother and I were always fighting because I wanted to watch Julia and he wanted to watch Mod Squad.
I would have picked your brother. I would have got
right. You just want to see Peggy Lipton.
Yes, that's right, Peggy Lipton. Yeah. You know, so there's always been, and even look at Angela Lansbury and Murder, mm-hmm. She Wrote, and, mm-hmm. you know, just been great opportunity for women in television. So that's always been wonderful. I also think television is great for character actresses. So you don't necessarily, like Mindy, you know, you don't have to be a gorgeous Mary Tyler Moore to have great roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always loved TV, but there is absolutely pressure, even for some, it's more pressure for people who became famous partly because of their beauty. So that when that fades, it's a much more difficult thing to deal mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. if that's what your fame was based on or partially based on. For people like me who are character actresses, it's not that big of a deal. You can age and it's not horrifying. But none of us like to, and to do it on camera, I mean, in some sense, I appreciate the pressure because it forces me to take care of myself and to stay in shape and and that's better for me. And I feel better. And when I feel better and I look better, everything's better. Mm-hmm. So, that's been great in that sense. In California generally, you know, it's kind of nutty and, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop and all her crazy stuff. But I think it's kind of good to be open to trying some things if it's going to be healthier for you and make the quality of life better. Then I love that. I mean, I think I'm from Cleveland and I love the whole Irish Catholic of it all, but there's a lot of drinking and a lot of kind of stuck in your ways kind of thing.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, I looked upon it, you know, we do all kinds of things and you go to the bar class and you drink your kale smoothies and all that kind of stuff, you know. And kind of looked at it, oh my gosh, they've totally gone LA and, you know, whatever. But I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with seeing a therapist. I'm okay with, you know, both like therapy for emotions and physical therapy and all that kind of stuff and just trying to stay well. So I think there's a lot of plus to it. Obviously, there's trying to stay young. Like, I'm just now growing out my hair and gonna let it go gray. You know, we'll see how that goes. We'll see how it looks. But I do want to sort of embrace my age and celebrate it because I've been through a lot and I have a lot to offer because of that. So I'm heading in that direction, but you know, I want to do it stylishly. I love style and I love stylish women and, it's fun, you know, and, I think there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I've spent time in Beverly Hills and there are some nightmarish looking folks there, you know, who kind of end up looking like Muppets and, that's scary, and that's a good sort of warning.
Yes, yes.
I'm all for just doing what little things are available, and there's so much available now that really keeps you looking you looking healthy. Yeah,
That's what I wanted to ask you. So you're you like Botox?
Love it. Fillers, lasers, PRP, Cosmolon. I do all kinds of peels and lasers, and I love all that stuff.
I do my Botox. I did a little taping of my Botox for our YouTube channel. But, you know, when you were mentioning how it was more difficult for women that were known as these models, I have to say, in the middle, when you had Brooke Shields on as your neighbor, it took me a while. I was like, who is that? That is Brooke Shields. And I was like, I am so glad she is doing this character. It just kind of made me feel like, look at her doing that character.
Yay. Well, you know, and of course she loves to do that because her whole life is about beauty and she was known as a beauty. She is a great beauty. And so how fun that was for her, you know, to play the trailer trash next door. And, you know, when she first, you know, I was a little bit intimidated. I had not met her before. And she's the nicest person so nice, so down to earth. She really is, for all her fame that she's had since childhood and hanging out with Michael Jackson at Studio 54 and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
She's just a lovely normal person. But still I was a little bit intimidated that she was coming onto the show. I mean, she's over 6 feet tall and she's almost as tall as Neil Flynn, who was playing my husband. And, you know, I was like, and I said to the makeup artist when he was coming in trying to figure out what her character is going to look like, I was like, could you put a cold sore on her lip? And he did.
Oh God.
I said to her, the cold sore was my idea. I have to confess to you. She goes, I love the cold sore. She was just marvelous as that character. And just, we used to just laugh our heads off when she was doing it.
Oh, she did it so well.
Yeah.
So
good. Yeah. Yeah. A little too well. I don't know what she's really like.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it's interesting to hear that perspective, because so many women in Hollywood seem to really get to the point where you can't even recognize them anymore. Yeah. And then part of the acting, isn't it? You need to have expressions on your face. And if
I'll tell you, that's the tricky thing. If you look at Frances McDormand, who is in Three Billboards and won the Academy Award for that, and now she's got one coming out. Where she plays, I guess there's a whole community of older people. This would be a good movie for you guys to discuss, because it's about retirement age people who kind of live in their RVs, and they travel around doing looking for work, like temporary kind of work, like Walmart and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of what the name of it is, but it's getting a huge buzz. But it's about this whole group of retirees who are kind of, they don't have enough in Social Security or pension or whatever, and so they have to, and they're sort of nomadic and driving from place to place looking for work in their RVs. Wow. And there's sort of a community. And so she's doing that. Now, you know, she doesn't, I mean, talk about not doing anything. She doesn't even, I don't think she even wears makeup to the Academy Awards, much less do anything to her, you know.
I agree. I don't think she did. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, when you see her, and I just, like, that person is such an incredibly strong individual who just really lives by their, you know, they're not, there's no fear there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she has her own insecurities. There was an interesting thing in the New York Times on her in one of their Sunday magazines a year or two ago, where that's like, she's just super uncomfortable with the photography session for the article. Like, she just not comfortable being photographed. Right. And so she, you know, you can see there's this, she's that a really particular kind of actress, and it's really about portraying characters, and it's not about creating a beautiful silhouette for the camera. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, and I don't know that I have the strength of character to let myself just go completely and let whatever's going to happen face wise and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I really, really, really admire that. I feel like I'm kind of a little bit in between. Where I like to do enough to try to look the way I look, like the best version of me at this age. That's kind of the goal, as opposed to trying to look younger. But I also don't want to look too much older than I am. And I think for all of us now, like us at in our 60s is not the same as our parents.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
Oh, no, right? Absolutely not.
No,
no. No, it's go ahead, Bridget.
Oh, I always say it's the hairstyles. Right. I had to do something, and they put to make me look like the 50s. Mm-hmm. And they did those real tight little bitty curls, and I was like, oh my gosh, I look like my grandmother. I look like my grandmother. And
right. It's generational.
And
I think I remember, and I could be wrong, but I thought I remember back, I think one of the first Emmy shows that you were at, you had just had all four boys, and someone was interviewing you on the red carpet, and you were talking about you had had a tummy tuck because having four boys, it just changed your body. And I thought that was so courageous to be like, no, it's not just this. This isn't natural. Because everybody always says, oh, this is just my natural body.
Yeah.
And was I right that you were talking about that then?
Yeah. Well, I had gained 50 pounds with every pregnancy. So, and they had all C-sections.
Oh,
so
my.
There was just this, you know, and they were big. They were like 10 pounder kind of guys.
Wow.
Oh my God. So, wow.
So my whole stomach was just really stretched out and sagging, and, you know, and you can't wear like anything slinky at to these award shows if that's what you look like. You have to have all the Spanx, and then the dress has to be really tight, and it can't be just kind of free and flowing or just like sort of clinging to your body. And I just didn't want to wear like heavy beaded old lady kind of dresses to these things. And also just for, you know, a healthy relationship with my husband, I wanted to feel good about my body and not be hiding it and that kind of thing. So that, which is the most important thing. And then the benefit is, oh, I look really great in this dress and I don't have to wear any Spanx. So,
and be comfortable. Yeah. The whole night.
So, yeah, yeah. And I would recommend it to everybody.
But it was great that you were like, yeah, that is what I did. And I feel good about myself. Cause that's really, you want to do it because you feel good about yourself, not because someone's saying to you, oh, if you want this part, you really need to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, I opened one speech I was doing to a women's group and I just listed everything I had done. Like, and I just started at the top of my head and just went all the way down my body. That took up the first 15 minutes of the speech, you know? So, because I do think that there, and especially now with younger women and social media, just the unrealistic expectation of how you're supposed to look is not healthy. And so many of us have had to do a lot of work to look the way we do and have had lots of different types of procedures done. So, you know, and Photoshop and all that stuff just creates all this really bad idea of perfection for women. And so that's why I felt like it was important to be honest. And it's funny because I think I just saw, I think it's Lindsay Vonn, the skier. Was just showing her getting her teeth recapped.
Oh, I think I saw that.
Yeah. She took off all her veneers and she just had these tiny little.
Yeah.
Was like, you know, that's really cool that you showed everybody that.
Right. That's reality, which is right. Great.
Yes, it right. is. It is. Yes.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad we got into that conversation.
Oh, I know. That yeah. was great. Yeah.
The listeners are really going to love that.
That was so. Good. Yeah.
They're going to love it and they're going to feel better.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Spending this time with us. We know you're busy.
Well, I cannot even tell you how much we appreciate Patricia Heaton being on the show and for talking to us for so long and, you know, just taking the time out of her busy schedule because she is very busy and we really appreciate it. We absolutely thoroughly enjoyed every bit of our conversation with her and learned so much. And make sure you get her book, Your Second Act, because it is so encouraging, just the different stories in it. And you find out what people can do and you're never too old to start something. So it really is a wonderful book to have. And I you know, highly recommend it. And so I've been doing a lot of reading this year. Yeah.
Since we've had the podcast, we read a lot more. We will be having one of the women from her book on as a guest. We will just keep you posted on that. So she will be coming up in the next few weeks. So have a great day, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this interview. We are going to continue trying to talk to the primetime women in midlife and beyond and just show how exciting this time of life can be.
Right.
So follow us on everything.
Yes. If there's anything that you would love to hear about that we haven't talked about, please send us a suggestion. On our email, you can email us. You can go to our website, hotflashescoldtopics.com. And, you know, we will, if we don't know the answer, which most of the time we don't, we find someone that does, that is a professional that can help us with that.
So stay tuned and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.